This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by one of our favorite guests. We get a chance to visit with Dr. Umbreen Nahal. We're going to talk to Dr. Nahal about vaccine hesitancy, about boosters, about how do we get more people vaccinated, and so forth. Dr. Nahal, I'll just quickly set up the question. About 51%, 52% of people in the country have been vaccinated fully. 70% have had at least one shot. Of those that are age eligible, meaning over 12, you know, stats hover at about 62% have been fully vaccinated. What are you seeing in vaccine hesitancy, and you know, and what's some of your sense of what's happening out there?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I'm really pleased to be on. I would love for us not to even have this conversation, for us to already be there. But we're working with the situation as best we can. And just to give a little bit of context, I am a board certified pediatrician. I've worked for the state of Massachusetts. I'm on monthly calls with HHS through a faith and community-based organization as a community stakeholder. So I come at this from a few different angles. I'm also actually a graduate of the Ahaan University in Karachi, Pakistan, even though I've been practicing for the last 15, 20 years in the US. So I'm also getting a global health perspective from people all over the world. So I do want to just clarify that while there is a lot of, you know, healthy skepticism of government, and I think you should always question everything, there is global worldwide acceptance that the vaccine is a good thing and it prevents death, disability, serious illness. And I think that message sometimes gets lost because of people's perceptions around specific sources of distrust. And I think when to answer your question about, you know, vaccine hesitancy, you know, they say all politics is local, all health is local as well. So, for instance, you know, whether or not somebody gets a certain illness does actually have to do with their zip code. The same is actually true about health beliefs. So if you're a small business owner who gets harassed by government because of, you know, some ridiculous, you know, regulation, you distrust government because of that. And now the government's offering you a vaccine. You're like, I don't know if I really agree with that. And you're kind of a show me type of person. You're more focused on your personal responsibility. I take good care of my health. Therefore, I don't need this stuff. I'm too strong. That is the mindset of that person. And you know, in a lot of ways, it's a really admirable mindset. But when it comes to vaccination, and then that doesn't work. And I'll circle back to that in a second. There's another type of person, our last conversation had been around minority health and barriers and things like that. Historically, yes, there has been good reasons, and even currently, why minorities do not trust government in terms of ethical issues regarding the way studies have been conducted, a number of things. So then that distrust is different. What I'm seeing there, what works is that, you know, if you work through a church group, through an Islamic group, through a Jewish group, and you have a trusted community leader communicate that, hey, I trust this, you should trust it, that actually starts to make a difference. There's also actually a large number of women, particularly who are more religious, and of different denominations, not calling out a specific one, who have been wrongly told that it somehow affects fertility, which it does not. And the really unfortunate thing with that group is that's often the group that are CNAs, nurses, frontline providers, clinicians. So I'm very concerned about what that does for people who are working in nursing homes from different perspectives. From the perspective of, are they bringing unwittingly, I'm not blaming anybody, unwittingly bringing in a risk to their patients? And as we have vaccine mandates, are their jobs at risk because of somebody providing them misinformation? So I'll pause there, but those are some high level observations.
No, thank you very, very much. I'll take you to another. We've seen some tick up in vaccines based on the most recent outbreaks, and some of the stats are overwhelming that the less vaccinated, more likely you end up in an ICU.
Correct.
Is that certain vaccines, already, is it already over? Have we already gotten the jump out of that from the concern people have had? Or is there, and the rest of this is really a ground game of blocking and tackling to get more people vaccinated. What's your sense of that?
Yes, I think to answer that question, we really kind of need to zoom out as to why do vaccines exist in the first place? And why don't we have a vaccine for certain things? And why do we have a vaccine for other things? Unfortunately, this is a moving target, right? So the reason why we have a vaccine for COVID-19, we look at a few different things. We look at the case fatality rate, and some people will be naysayers like, well, the actual percentage is relatively small. Well, but if everybody in the population gets exposed to it, that's a high number. So in the United States, we've had over 630,000 deaths, right? And death does not then think about sort of the number, the people who end up in the ICU and then have their lungs damaged by both the virus and the ventilator and long-term disability or long COVID. So yes, to your answer your question, it is true that those who have been vaccinated we are seeing success on the outcomes and parameters for which the vaccine was developed, which is to prevent death, prevent serious infection, prevent disability. What it is not preventing is 100% you don't get the virus ever again. And so some of the naysayers are like, see, it's not effective. No, that's not true. It is effective for what it was intended for. And so we need to reduce the prevalence in the population. So yes, we need to get more people vaccinated. There are boosters now recommended for those who are immunocompromised.
Talk about boosters for a second, because we your point is well taken. I mean, yeah, some of the naysayers say like, oh, see, they got vaccinated, they're still in the hospital. And again, like the flu vaccine, like any vaccine, well, some vaccines actually are 100% vaccines. These vaccines seem to be a little bit more like the flu vaccine, a little bit more like it's going to reduce the severity, not necessarily stop you from getting it. The other thing that you're hearing is that for people that are older, 70, 80 plus, that the efficacy, the usefulness of the vaccine, start to drop pretty sharply after 4, 5, 6 months. And for all of us, I think all of us, I'm 6.5, 7 months in. I'm ready for a booster, quite frankly. What is your sense of like, I mean, we're all going to need boosters until they get this figured out. I take it to the end of the day, they're injecting antibodies in our body. The first couple of times they did this as they're learning about these vaccines for COVID, they didn't want to overdo it because they don't want too many people getting deathly ill from the vaccine. So the vaccines were not.
I would pause there. There actually are very few people getting deathly ill from the vaccine, but everything else I would agree with.
No. I would say that. No. I did not say people are getting deathly ill. What I said is that the vaccines were done in such a low dose that almost nobody got deathly ill. Almost nobody,
correct,
if anybody,
correct,
got deathly ill.
Thank you for clarifying.
Purposely,
that, yes.
No, 100%. In starting a new vaccine program, it would have been insane to go too strong or too big on the dosage so that you didn't have bad side effects. So the concept that we all need boosters 5, 7, 8 months afterwards, to me, is completely natural. And hopefully as they get better at this and clarify, maybe we can do a little bit bigger dosage, maybe we can't, we'll be in a spot where we don't need boosters so often. No, I did not say people are getting deathly ill from the vaccine.
Sure,
what
I said was
that the dosages on the first couple shots are probably relatively low because it's a new and evolving science, at least on this virus. And so people didn't want to overhit us and end up with people getting very sick and bad outcomes. And so, but think of it in terms of like 5, 6, 7, 8 months. It's your sense we're going to be doing boosters for, like we do the flu shot every year, we're going to be doing boosters for at least the foreseeable future, aren't we?
So, I mean, you may have seen the news this week that there was, some disagreement on this issue at the FDA. There was a little bit of turnover. So I would say currently the booster is available and recommended for those who have low immunity. The exact timing of boosters for the rest of us is to be determined. However, yes, to exactly to your point, we do know that both with natural and with the vaccine, there is waning immunity, and the number of months exactly is a little bit unclear, but definitely not past a year does immunity last. And that was expected. That's not new news. So again, this is where folks don't necessarily take into account what the baseline is. People are like, well, if the immunity wanes with the vaccine, why even take it? Well, the reason why.
You and I agree that that's the people that I guess you have to take that seriously, but it's such a ridiculous, when I hear the naysayers, I've got some, you know, on the extreme, some very strong anti-vax commenters that are say exactly that. But you and I know that's insanity, isn't it? This concept that, well, why would I take a vaccine if the usefulness of it wanes over time? I mean, that's an insane. I mean, I guess you could respond to that, but it's such an insane comment. But I guess you have to respond to it anyways.
I will acknowledge that I have started to be like you. I don't respond to that, because what I've found is that, I mean, it's interesting. I'm in business school right now, and they talk about sort of like, if people are in sales, right? There's a good customer who you can make a value proposition to, and they want an outcome, and it's just finding the right explanation that makes sense to them. And then there are bad customers who are just, no matter what you say, they're like, not this quarter, and they're just never going to purchase it. The problem that we have is that with public health is that, you know, human beings are going to exist on the spectrum. You're always going to have those skeptics, and skeptics are important for humanity. Like, you like those people who like go down into the weeds and figure things out. We need them in humanity. But in public health, when you have, you know, more than half a million people who've died, even more people who are going to have lifelong disability, now children are affected. That personal responsibility mindset that also translates into, I am not going to take any risks. One, you're not taking into account the risk of the natural virus, which affects, I'm hearing from the front line, people in their 30s who are not making it. Right. And it is, I mean, it's heartbreaking no matter what age that you have to communicate that to a patient or a family. But let's be honest, it's especially heartbreaking at age 30. Right. So there's a discounting of the risk of the actual virus. And then secondly, I mean, there was a time in America where we would actually join together and we did amazing things, sent somebody to the moon, you know. We've accomplished such amazing things, and unfortunately, the fabric has been so disrupted of society that we're not willing to do something to protect our elderly neighbor anymore. And personally, I find that utterly heartbreaking.
But I don't think that. I think what happens is, I don't think that people. I think that I would attribute different motives.
Okay.
I don't think the person who's not taking it, I don't think they think they're doing harm to anybody. I think they either think it's their personal right not to take it, or they think it's untested and they're unclear of how it's going to turn out. I don't think
Fair.
They do it because they don't view it as their, like, I don't view it as malicious. I view it as
correct,
not thoughtful, but I don't view it as malicious. I really don't attribute maliciousness to it. And I wouldn't attribute, just like I wouldn't attribute to a black or white person. You could parse through a million different motives. I don't think it's malice on the part of the black person, the minority person, to not take it. I don't think it's malice on the part of the, you know, Republican white person not to take it. I think there's, I mean, not that black people aren't Republicans and Democrats, and white people aren't Republicans and Democrats. I mean, there's a huge amount of narrative in the media. Oh, it's dumb white Southerners not taking it who are just dumb, and it's not really true. There's different thoughts. There's different sort of like this culture of don't tread on me. There's those kinds of cultures, those cultures in the minority communities that we don't trust the government. I don't attribute to either one of them, any of these communities, malice. I attribute it to, on one hand, a distrust of government. On the other hand, a distrust of government. On the other hand, also this concept of don't tread on me. I mean, there's multiple different things that are driving it. I think wrong. I think wrong decisions being made not to take it. And I think at some point, you do see different governments pushing through and employers pushing through a harder core on these mandates. And that will push a certain additional percentage to take it. And we'll see where it goes. I mean, it's really a fascinating subject, Dr. Nail. It really is. I think.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you what you just said. I mean, it is. I think this is just so close to my heart in terms of children are going back to school. You're hearing of school teachers who are passing away, and you're right. It isn't knowledge. It is, but people are genuinely skeptical. But I think
they're genuinely skeptical. If I blame anybody, like, for example, I'll go with you on this. I saw the South Dakota governor speak the other day, and she spoke for, 10 minutes on personal freedom and not mandates and those kinds of things. And then she said at the very end of the discussion, but everybody should get vaccinated. I got vaccinated, everybody else should get vaccinated. And I don't disagree with her personal freedom mandate and the anti-mandate. I don't agree or disagree. What I did dislike about the discussion was, I wish you would have started with, I got vaccinated. I encourage you all to get vaccinated. We should all get vaccinated.
Exactly.
Now, I believe in personal freedom, and then close with, you should all get vaccinated. But it's sort of like, it's sort of, what I do dislike is whether on the left or right, playing to the political crowd, rather than starting with, look, I'm an intelligent woman. I'm the governor of South Dakota. I'm very bright. I got vaccinated. I think you should all get vaccinated. I'm not going to force you to, but I think you all should. And rather than playing 90% to personal freedom, not mandates, something like that. But of course, I mean, she finished and closed with, of course I got vaccinated. What am I? I'm not crazy. Of course I got vaccinated. And so I think, I don't like the politicians gaming this or playing to their political crowd. I don't attribute in the individual doesn't get vaccinated malice towards or not caring about the elderly, not caring about the family members. I think a lot of it's anecdotal. The sooner they see more people in their own community getting really sick, the more likely they are to say, oh, maybe I should get vaccinated. But then it's become this crazy point of pride not to get vaccinated in some communities, and that's crazy too.
And to your point, I think part of the issue is that because when people do get COVID, or when they get, whether it's to quarantine at home or whether it is in the hospital, we aren't allowing visitors in the hospital, right? And you quarantine alone, so actually it's not seen, right? And so that lack of human connection is, I think what I was trying to say. There's been a the social fabric, I think, in America is disrupted. I do think that's true. I think we need to find ways as a country to trust each other again. Broadly, I think specifically in the pandemic, we have gotten cut off from each other. We are all online. We are all on Zoom. There is evidence that Zoom gives you paranoia, causes you to distrust, and we're getting our information online. Algorithms reward the most clicks. The most clicks happen on the most outrageous memes and ridiculous things. And so we get constantly exposed to misinformation. Rather than having this kind of conversation. I mean, you and I probably disagree on bajillions of things, right? But we can still have this conversation.
Probably actually, Dr. Nail, I would say a very small percentage of things, but yeah, on some for sure. I would say it's probably, I would guess that it's actually a very, very small percentage of things, but 100%.
Okay, okay. I was trying to.
No, but I think you're right. Well, clearly we have a communication problem in our country, and there's a problem if you're a left winger, you turn on Fox for 1 second, you turn it off. If you're a right winger, you turn on CNN for 1 second, you turn it off. And rightfully so, because each station is so full of narrative from their own side that nothing is just informative news anymore. Everything starts with, it's like this governor thing. Everything starts with bashing the other side before she gets to the core talking point that really counts. Of course I got vaccinated. We should all get vaccinated. And that's how both of the networks are. They just start with bashing the other side without any sort of discussion of anything down the middle at all. So it leads to just fervent distrust. If there's a Biden administration in power, you got a certain amount of people that just won't trust anything they do. When Trump was pushing Operation Warp Speed in the vaccines, you had CNN saying, oh, it's too quick. We can't do a vaccine. It took 20 years to do one. We've never did one for cancer, something like that.
Yeah, it's so odd though, because the administration that actually could claim the success of the vaccine That to me is, I would love to analyze what happened there, because the physicians who were in that administration had very strong religious ties as well to religious groups. And so I, as a physician who myself is faithful and has conversations within my faith community, I'm really curious, like, what was the barrier there? How is it that scientists who also had faith were, what did we need to do better to better communicate and bring people along when you are actually in power?
I mean, one of the things that's happened too is, like, you have no ability, for example, if you want to look at this from multiple different sides, you have no ability for Senator Biden to go to the southern states and say, look, a lot of credit for this vaccine moving so quickly is due to Operation Warp Speed done under my predecessor.
Right.
But he would get killed on CNN and the
right,
the more liberal narrative stations by saying anything like that. But that would be a way to reach across party lines. And so what you get instead of is you get all kinds of people criticizing everybody who's not doing this, even though they should do it. But our politicians do us no favors on it, I think, on either side.
And I will add to that, as somebody who is a physician who has probably too many letters after my name, who has been in academia, I frankly also think that academia needs to take credit. There is a very justified distrust of, sort of the egotistical, out of touch, ivory towered person. And I mean, again, I'm extremely grateful for my colleagues who are brilliant and come up with these innovations. But at the same time, there has been an increasing gap between, I think, scientists and how they communicate and whether they really engage the public, as well as the way academia works, you get rewarded if you're first or last author. And if you collaborate, there's not really an incentive for that. So I've even seen, for instance, like in women's health, like a woman who had an online survey around, tell me about your side effects. But I was deeply concerned that this is, yes, we need to get information. And, who had communicated her study to the public before even ethics review had happened. And I think that even in academia, what you're describing in politics, this rush to the media and get your name out there and get credit for the work that you're doing sometimes is faster than the thoughtful consideration as to, like, thinking about the impact of this on policy, on trust, on potential for miscommunication. So, I think overall, that we just somehow need to have more conversations, I think, and be able to get past these labels, whether it's by party, whether it's by whatever. I think we just need to figure out how to have conversations.
Could not agree more. It could not agree more. Dr. Nahal, it's always a pleasure to visit with you. I want to thank you for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. It is always great to visit with you. And I would guess that we agree on at least 93 to 98% of all issues. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.